go to the other small towns like Fresno, Visalia, and Hanford, and we would play basketball against the Chinese in those communities. Sometimes we would invite teams from San Francisco down or from Los Angeles up to Bakersfield, and we would travel too. Mm-hmm. And in those days, usually in conjunction with this inner city basketball mm-hmm. game would be a dance or some kind of social. So it was an opportunity for young Chinese students to meet one another. Uh-huh. And so we had in Bakersfield, I think we sponsored one dance a year. People in Fresno sponsored a dance a year. And the Visalia and Hanford Chinese would get together uh-huh. and sponsor one. So we had maybe half a dozen social events a year throughout the Central California and Northern California and Southern California regions.
Mm-hmm. How about with the non-Chinese groups? Did you compete with them in basketball?
Well, yes. No, we did not on the team level, except though that some of us would participate in the school teams. Mm-hmm. And in the Y, there was a Y MCA team too, and of course some of the Chinese would participate. Mm-hmm. But that was separate and apart. That would be inter-school in the regular high school teams. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I see. And did, there was no other teams like bands or singing groups and bridge clubs or any type of activities that Chinese would participate?
Oh, certainly. Well, we would participate in of course, there were French clubs, French language clubs, Spanish language clubs. We would participate in that. We would. Some of us would join the other activities.
In other words, Chinese students were not shy away from.
No. I think the Chinese.
Extracurricular.
No, I think the Chinese participated fully in the school activities.
So in high school,
with exception of the, I guess, the dances, for example. I mean, mm-hmm. when we did go to the dance, we would almost always invariably date Chinese girls. And uh-huh. if we went to the dances, we would kind of dance just among with our own group. Yeah.
Uh-huh. How about when you were in high school, have you already thinking about the future? What are you going to take up in college? Are you going to college or?
Well, I think when I was in high school, the realization that opportunities were limited mm-hmm. Made me decide that I would go into business law and eventually come back and work in my father's store.
Uh-huh.
That was, so when I studied at Bakersfield Junior College, I was into accounting and economics and business. When I went to UC Berkeley for my undergraduate work, I also went into the College of Commerce and studied banking and economics, advertising, accounting, and things like that in the business field.
And you did aware of the, you said that you were aware of the lack of opportunity.
Yes.
Is this for Chinese or is this during the Depression time?
No, well I think it was especially difficult for minorities. Mm-hmm. For example, we had in Bakersfield relatively few college graduates, mm-hmm. and the few college graduates weren't able to get jobs. Mm-hmm. We had one or two engineers who graduated from Cal, came back and had to work in the grocery store or in the service station. They could not get jobs as engineers. Mm-hmm. And I think that was true with in some of the other fields. It's just very difficult to be placed.
So you heard all of this?
Certainly.
That's how you decide.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, right. And can you tell us about the your experiences in college then, in Bakersfield and then the Berkeley?
Well, I think my experiences in junior college is very similar to my experiences in high school. I mean, it was the same group of students, and we still had the same limited social life. However, when I went to UC Berkeley, we had a broader broader experience in one way, and still on the other, another way speaking, we had more Chinese activities. For example, there was a Chinese students club at the time I was at Berkeley with several hundred members, and we had our own student body activities and so forth, and there was a Chinese fraternity on campus, but this was formed because we were not accepted in the other fraternities. In fact, even our Chinese fraternity was not recognized by the other fraternities. We did not own a home at that time. We just rented a flat, and about six or eight of us lived in the Chinese fraternity house. The year I became president of the fraternity, I got us into the Interfraternity Council, and that was a breakthrough. Even then, after we got into the Interfraternity Council, in the yearbook, all the fraternities were placed in alphabetical order, except ours. Ours was the last, although...
But to Chinese students, that's already a big...
Well, certainly, I mean, we at least got into the Interfraternity Council and got a vote and had some recognition. But of course, now the same fraternity has its own house, funds were raised by the alumni group. A nice house now on Fraternity Row, and I think that, but it's still a Chinese fraternity, although I think there are a few Japanese members in there.
Oh, I see. So, first thing would be at Berkeley, they have fraternity house, whatever, it was pretty much a restriction also to Chinese, or?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and what kind of restrictions also to the Chinese? I mean, there were some Chinese students probably were not able to get in, or almost everybody can get
oh
in.
no, it was a more limited membership, yes.
What type of rules and set that down?
Well, for one thing, I suppose not everyone was interested in belonging. It was convenient for those who lived there to have a place to stay. Because actually, the Chinese Students Club was probably the bigger organization. We had actually owned a home. Chinese Students Club had a house in just a block off Fraternity Row. A nice home, which accommodated maybe 20 or 30 students. All male. I mean, there was no co-ed housing at that time. And that was really the more active organization. The Chinese Students Club had larger socials. They had monthly meetings. And it appealed to a larger percentage of the Chinese students. But even the Chinese Students Club only attracted maybe half of the Chinese students.
Mm. Who are these Chinese students? Where did they come from and their background?
Well, I think at Cal we had a large number of commuters, those who lived in San Francisco and Oakland and commuted.
Mm-hmm.
And of the students who commuted, I don't think they participated as fully
mm-hmm.
in the social life
mm-hmm.
of the university. For one thing, they were so busy commuting, it was not as easy then as it is now. And generally speaking, many students who lived off campus were from families with more modest circumstances,
mm-hmm.
and that meant they had to work.
And were there many?
And of course, it's harder to participate in university life when they're living off campus. I think that's the
mm-hmm.
that's the truth of it. But of the students who lived on campus, many of them were from the smaller towns,
mm-hmm.
and many of them were from China.
Mm-hmm.
We had an international house
mm-hmm.
at Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
and I think many of the students from China lived there,
mm-hmm.
as well as students from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a little more expensive than the international house, and so there was fewer students who were able to live there.
Uh-huh. Were the Chinese students from, say, all over the United States get along very well with the Chinese students from China? How did they?
Well, there were a few students from China who participated fully
mm-hmm.
In the Chinese Students Club. But this, of course, was a small percentage and attracted just the outgoing,
mm-hmm.
the outgoing ones. The ones who were a little more shy or a little more reserved never attended these meetings.
Uh-huh.
And that was true with the American-born students. I mean, those who commuted, who were a little more shy, never made the contact.
Uh-huh.
So, 'cause for some of them, it was just classes and home. Classes and home.
Mm-hmm. How about American Caucasian friends? Were you able to make associate with them and make good friends with them? Probably few of them.
Very few, actually, because mm-hmm. I think once we got to University of California, aside from the contacts we made at International House,
mm-hmm.
I stayed in International House for a year.
Mm-hmm.
We made some contacts, but most of the friends we made were on a very superficial basis.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you spoke to one another, but there was really no long-term friendships. I think the friends that we still have now are the Chinese friends from UC Berkeley.
Uh-huh. How about the classes, the performance of Chinese? Were they more outstanding in terms of classwork?
Well, I would think so. That by and large, the Chinese students did well.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I know that in the Interfraternity Council, when we went into the Interfraternity Council, our fraternity was tops scholastically all the way through.
Mm-hmm. What is the reason you think that Chinese perform, all in all, better or pretty well? Was there any special reasons or?
Well, I think for one thing, I can only speak for the period of time when I was at Cal.
Uh-huh.
We had less distractions.
Mm-hmm.
We had fewer outside activities to interfere with our studies.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that the drive to succeed may have been fairly strong among the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Some have realized that the sacrifice the families were making in order to
mm-hmm.
get them to college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So was the family's influence also pretty strong?
I would think so. I would think so, at least in those days.
So would the parents usually tell, well, for example, yourself, your father emphasized on education, the importance of education.
Oh, I think so. I think that's, see, many of the first generation had very little education themselves, and they worked hard, long hours, and they wanted their children to have something better. I think this is true not just in the Chinese community, but I think in most immigrant families.
What about, I often heard people say that, you know, if you're Chinese, you have to work twice as hard. Was that what you would hear in early days, your parents,
I think,
your
so.
Relatives?
I think so. I think that we were told that we had to outperform the others, or, and particularly I think that the need to not only excel, but the need to conform. I think by and large, the Chinese students presented fewer disciplinary problems to the teachers.
Mm-hmm. How about in the fraternity that you have, you also have a lot of scholastic activities. How about the sports and extracurricular type of activities besides dancing? And you have also basketball team, you have tennis club, and
actually, I think our fraternity was not nearly as active as, say, the American fraternities.
Mm-hmm.
Ours was essentially a convenient living arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And we had just some social activities, but really was at a minimum, I think.
Limit to what type of social activities?
Well, I think we had occasional picnics, occasional dances.
I see. But what is the relationship between the Chinese students' clubs and this fraternity?
Well, actually, almost everyone in the fraternity belonged to the Chinese students' club.
Uh-huh.
So,
see.
So that was a greater organization.
Uh-huh.
And a more active organization.
Uh-huh. What's the name of the fraternity?
Pi Alpha Phi.
Oh, and it's still in existence today.
Yes, it's still in existence today.
And it's the only Chinese.
I believe it's the only Chinese fraternity at the University of California.
At that time, was there any Chinese sorority?
Yes, there was a Chinese sorority up there.
At that time?
Yes. They, there was an off-campus sorority, and I think that they had students from other colleges too that belonged. I think Mills and some of them that belonged to them.
Mm-hmm. So did the fraternity and sorority have sort of interaction?
Not that much, really.
Uh-huh. Did they actually get into the inter?
I don't think so. I mean, they never had. It was more or less an off-campus.
Oh, I see.
And at least when I was there, they were never into the sorority.
The Chinese students there, most of them were males, or?
Yes, I would say.
What's the percentage of at that time when I talked to you?
I would say 2-1, 3-1.
Uh-huh.
So I think in that area.
Uh-huh. So what you were majoring was still concentrating accounting and law.
Not law.
Not law.
Although we had courses in business law, but this was essentially a
business
administration, yes, major.
I see. How about later? When did you decide to go to law school? And
it was not till after the war. I guess during my last months in the service, when I was thinking of what should I do now, having spent 3 years in the service, I had the good fortune of becoming good friends with the base legal officer on my last post, and he was lamenting the fact that I had returned from overseas and I was on my way out of the service, whereas he was on his way overseas. And as a base officer, base legal officer, he never had an opportunity to serve overseas, and he really wanted to get out and go home. But he was unable to leave the service. In fact, he was on his way overseas, and he was telling me the wonderful opportunities in law, and I ought to look into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so my options were, number one, I had graduated from college before the war,
mm-hmm.
and I could either go return to Bakersfield and go back in the business with my father, or I could go to law school. So I decided, well, I may as well go to law school. I have this opportunity to go under the GI Bill of Rights, so
mm-hmm.
that's what I did.
Uh-huh. What did your father think about?
Well, he was a little skeptical. In fact, he did not think that there was any opportunities for Chinese in the law, and he had many facts and figures to support his point of view, because there were very few Chinese lawyers at that time in the United States, or even in California. I think there may have been in the whole state four or five, maybe half a dozen Chinese lawyers, and most of them just practicing immigration law in a limited field.
But even with that kind of facts, you still had the courage to get in. What is the most, was there any special motivation aside from, say, there's a future in the law? What did that lead you, or you just had strong interest in?
Well, I had an interest in the law, and I did well in my business law classes. And we had a course in junior college called American Institutions, where we studied the Supreme Court decisions. And I was very interested in that, so I thought I would like to go into it. And at the outset, I realized that my chances of getting a job in law firms would not be very good. But at the same time, I felt that there may be some opportunities in civil service.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my thought, that perhaps if I got through law school, I could get some job with the government. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that there are chances in civil service?
I think the under the civil service system, there are more opportunities, even not just for law, but for other fields.
Was that also because during the World War II, more Chinese were able to get into the civil service?
Yes, I think so. There are more openings, and there are greater opportunities. So
did your father also strongly encourage you go back to Bakersfield and help out with the family business, or at that time he wasn't really?
Well, I feel that he was skeptical, and he waited until actually I finished law school, got a job, and was well established before he finally retired and sold the business. So he was
still hand on the business.
Well, I guess he kind of felt that maybe it was a good safety net for me, just in case
mm-hmm.
I didn't make it. Yeah.
How about financial sources when you went to school, through the college and graduate school?
My parents helped me out considerably.
Mm-hmm. So you were probably one of the very fortunate ones that have the full support.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to work though at any time?
Well, I always worked in the grocery store
mm-hmm.
All the way through high school, junior high,
mm-hmm.
junior college, that is.
Uh-huh.
Should we take a break or we get
some? So, Judge Wong, would you like to talk about your experiences at Stanford?
Yes.
And why you decided to go to Stanford and how you got in and that.
Yes. Well, my selection of Stanford as a law school was a very fortunate one for me. As you remember, in 1945, Japan surrendered in August.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the service personnel were released on a point system.
Mm-hmm.
And we each receive 1 point for each month served in the armed forces.
Mm-hmm.
You got an extra point for every month served overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And you got 5 points for each decoration you received.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, the people who were flying combat missions over in Europe or in Asia received many points for all the combat missions and for the decorations. So consequently, the flyers got out first.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was separated in early September, late August, early September.
Mm-hmm.
So I immediately went to, I checked the law schools. I went to USC.
Mm-hmm.
I went, checked at UC Berkeley and Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
And I was too late for SC and USC, but I was not too late for Stanford, which started end of September.
Uh-huh.
So I applied, and I was accepted at Stanford. So happened that the dean of the Stanford Law School was very interested in aviation law, and he just loved talking to people who had been flying during the war. And so our first class, consisting of 50, I think included 40 flyers, simply because most of them got out early because of the points,
mm-hmm.
point system. And so so we had a large number of Air Force, Navy,
mm-hmm.
Marine,
mm-hmm.
Air personnel.
Mm-hmm.
So we started in this class of 50 in September, and then following January, they started another class of 200.
Mm-hmm.
And again, most of them were veterans. Because
mm-hmm.
during the war years, the law schools practically shut down because it was not an essential
field,
and there was no deferments for lawyers. They all went into the service.
Oh.
Whereas those in medicine or dentistry or even engineering got deferments because their skills were needed for the war effort. So the class before us at Stanford only had six or eight students.
Oh, probably, no, I was going to say all women.
That's right. That's
was
what,
that true?
Not all, but half. Yeah, they were either, I think of that class, women and people who are ineligible for the armed forces because of physical disability.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that the education at Stanford was good. We were away from the distractions of the big city,
mm-hmm.
and that was good for me because I, when I attended Berkeley, I was very wrapped up in both the university life, not only socially, but campus politics and all that. And I knew that for me to go back into a big city situation would interfere with my studies, so I was quite happy to go out to the quietness of the Stanford campus
uh-huh.
for my law school studies.
Uh-huh. So how many years were you there?
For 3 years.
For 3 years.
I graduated in 1948. And I took a civil service exam, as I thought I would, and got a job at with the state legislature
mm-hmm.
in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
So I was with the state on the legal staff of the state legislature for almost 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was an opportunity to transfer to the Attorney General's office. And I did that, transferred in 1951 in Los Angeles. So I took my first job in Los Angeles as with the Attorney General's office, and so happened. I was the first Chinese to be appointed as a Deputy Attorney General in the state.